Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 162 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast, where me and my three co-hosts talk all things solo Beatles. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, my backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, good to be back again here for part two with Ken, with a friend like you, and hanging out on a Sunday, which, even though this won't get posted for a while, but and this is pre-Beatle Fest, so by the time this goes out, Beatle Fest will already have happened. So
So we're recording on the 27th today, and as you can see, we have a legend in the field of podcasting and broadcasting and everything Beatles. He is just somebody that I look up to, and discovered his Things We Said Today podcast back in 2012, which we're probably celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, and see if they're going to do anything for that. And he's also, like I said, been broadcasting for 40 years. His show, Every Little Thing, is just simply amazing. I've learned so much from his show, and a lot of the songs that we're going to be talking about, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but some of the songs we'll be talking about today, I heard for the first time on his show, and I got him to thank for that. He's also my co-host on Talk More Talk. And Ken, it's really good to see you again, and thanks for popping
Sure, it's always a blast being on your show. I
in.
love doing Talk More Talk with you. I've had both of you on my YouTube channel. It's all one great big family.
And Ken, Saturday Night Live, they have this, five timers club, tradition. But here on Two Legs, we got a six timers club, and congratulations on being the first member of the six timers club.
I've been on your show. This is the sixth time.
This is the sixth time, yeah. One with five times, and then no, four times, and then one with Darren for the crossover thing we did with Things We Said Today. So
Oh, okay.
yeah,
Cool.
so there you go. You got the Two Legs jacket coming in the mail. It's you
Good,
should be
good. And the pipe? Can I
yes,
get a
the
pipe
pipe,
too?
and yeah, maybe you can wear it at the fest if you want. But
Invite Steve Martin
anyways,
along and, you know.
yes, there you go. He can celebrate as well. So, but as Andy said, we're doing part two of the series called A Friend Like You, which we did now.
I
Geez,
was going to ask you, when did we do part one? That had to be in
it had to have been
2020.
over a year now. Yeah, maybe, but it's been a little while. But the thing is this does take a little research. It's just not all these songs just weren't in my brain. I had to actually go back
Well,
and look.
give everybody some context of why we're tackling this
Well,
topic.
why we're
Why?
tackling this is because, Paul is graciously given his time and energies to musicians, some that, for good friends that may have asked him for a song, or his buddies from the Beatles days, so he does a lot of work with giving, if somebody contacted him for a song for a film, or somebody just needed him to add a bass part to it or backing vocals, he's been there to help a lot of people along the way. And like I said, this is part two. This is covering the 80s and 90s. And
Right.
I have right now, I think this is 30, I wrote down 36, but I think I got 37 on here. But because I added one this morning actually. And but yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, but before we get to that, I do want to mention, like I said, we're recording this on the 27th, and this is not going to be posted for a couple weeks still. But I do want to mention the passing of Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters fame, the drummer for Foo Fighters. And for hardcore Paul fans, they should know that Paul performed on this the Concrete and Gold album, where he played drums for Taylor's song Sunday Rain, which I think was one of the best songs on the album myself. Really good song, really good drumming from Paul, and great vocals for t from Taylor Hawkins. So 50 years old is really young,
Wait, yeah.
to pass. So, and I'm not
But,
going to speculate on what
well,
the death was
yeah,
yet until we get the official,
well, that's, I think that's been,
statement.
well, they've said, I think, officially what it was that was released today, what,
what yeah, but I haven't seen that yet, so I'm not going to report on that now until I've seen the any kind of report on it. But you know, it's a shame. Young. You know, it's 50, very 50, talented.
50, 51. How old was he?
50
years old. Yeah. Wow.
You know, Ringo has tweeted. I mean, you know, countless of musicians have tweeted about his death. He was very, very loved in the musicians, you know, world community, if you will. And, you know, yeah, 50 years is just, you know, it's sad.
It's extremely sad. You know, the Foo Fighters have been around a long time. They were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by Paul.
Yep.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm sure that their fans are feeling it. And Paul's been a longtime friend now with Dave Grohl, especially.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very sad.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Ken, like I mentioned earlier, you just celebrated your 40th anniversary in broadcasting, and we just want to, you know, talk about that for a few minutes, congratulate you on that special honor, and to still continue to do this, you know, for as long as you have. You still love it? Are you still enjoying, you know, broadcasting and playing the music that you've been playing for years now, decades?
Absolutely. You know, at times, you know, I never envisioned myself doing this from the very beginning. I knew I wanted to have a career in radio. I thought of myself as being a DJ and being more of a top 40 DJ back in the days when top 40 was an art form. And this never would have happened to me. A friend of mine that I worked at my college radio station knew that I was a big Beatle fan. And I had been doing the Sunday night shift at the college radio station from 10 to 1, which was the least desirable shift there of the week. From 1 to 6 in the morning, it was all automated. Nobody wanted the Sunday night shift. And this friend of mine knew I was a big Beatle fan. People at the station knew that. And he suggested, why don't you just do an hour of Beatles, which I figured I'd close the show with from midnight to 1. Didn't really get much of a response. It was a dead time. Really. But then I said, you know what, let me move it to 10 o'clock for an hour. And then the phones really lit up. And the ironic thing of all is that this radio station really didn't go as a signal much further than our campus. We were heard on cable television. We were just an audio signal. It was only a mono signal. And you had to know about it. You had to know that we were broadcasting on there. So we had an audience, and we built up an audience. I just did a show on my YouTube channel with Ed Ryan, who is a friend of mine. He was my co-host for a year of the first year and a half when I was on college radio. And I grew to love doing a Beatles show then. I never thought that this would be a career. And, you know, the first radio station that I approached after college was WDHA in New Jersey. Dave Morrell, who you know, Tom, suggested that I send a tape there. And they took the show and ran for 10 years. I really developed it there. But the thing that I love most about doing the shows is that, you know, without my trying to be different, I was extremely different with what I did. I mixed the group and the solo music together, treated it as one catalog. I had news every week that I presented when it moved to New Jersey. I did all the unique themes that I do that you talk about a lot on Talk More Talk. I have all kinds of trivia that I incorporated into the show, which I still do on my website every single week. And it's in my syndicated show for Every Little Thing. And I never would have thought I'd still be doing this 40 years later. And then later on, the podcast started with Fab Forum in 2009, Things We Said Today, 2012, and then Talk More Talk in 2019. And I'm busier now than I've ever been with all my Beatles stuff. I love every show that I do, but sometimes it just can consume you. You know, it's like you never have a moment's rest. There's always some prep work you have to do for some show, especially when you're interviewing authors and they have new books out. And I don't like to breeze through books. I like to really, you know, read every
absorb them. Yeah. So you're informed when you interview them. Sure.
Yeah. But I really love what I'm doing. And I think if it wasn't for the fact that I mixed the solo years of the Beatles with the group, you know, as great a catalog as the Beatles is, I still would get kind of bored because it would get too repetitious.
Yeah.
Once you add in all the solo stuff, you know, which is 80% of their output now.
Right.
There's so much there to explore. And that's what makes it really interesting for me. It gives you so much breathing room. It allows you to be far more creative. And I love doing that. I like doing shows like Every Little Thing, where I do themes and I try to get my audience to think what songs would fit in there. And yeah. So, you know, sometimes you're right, sometimes they're not in there. But I like to engage the audience. I like to do a show that caters to every level of fan. Just someone who's starting out as a Beatle fan that wants to hear the hits, the more hardcore fans that want to hear deep cuts, and even some that want to hear stuff they've never heard before. So if you mix all that together, you're always giving people more of a reason to listen to your show. Mm. That's what Every Little Thing has been. And then, you know, I think hardcore fans love the podcasts quite a lot because we can really delve deep into an album that where else are people going to talk about it? Like we just talked about Somewhere in England. You know, it doesn't happen that often that you're going to hear a conversation about Somewhere in England anywhere. You're certainly not going to hear it on the radio, you know.
Ken, I thought of you yesterday, and I texted Tom. I texted Tom and said, did you guys ever do another listen to George Harrison's Extra Texture? Because it's an album that, I'm going to be quite honest, I don't know all that well other than you and a couple. And I played it all the way through, and I enjoyed it, especially this Can't Stop Thinking About You. And I said, Tom was like, yeah, we did a show on that. And just gave me a reason to go back to that show and watch what you guys said about it. And I learned, as somebody is, I mean, I'm hardcore Paul, but I mean, that's an album that I don't know as well, but thanks to your guys' show and going into that, revisiting it, I learned even more about it. You see? Yeah. So,
well, one of the great things about podcasts, as you guys know, is that when you do a topic like that, you're reviewing an album, you may get new listeners, new subscribers to your channel, and they discover that show, or they might want to watch it a year later. It's still there. You know, it doesn't have to be the new show of the week that matters. You know, everything that you do, you put out there, and as long as it's accessible on YouTube or wherever, you'll get people listening to old shows and discovering things. So aside from the news that I do every week, which can get dated, when you get to the main topic of each show, all that stuff just holds. You know, you can listen to it years later and still get something out of it.
And it's funny you mentioned that, Andy, too, because when we do those Another Listen shows, some of the comments, I mean, we've gotten quite a few people saying, well, you know what, that album wasn't as bad as I thought it was, or that, you know, listening to it again, it didn't deserve the criticism that it got. So it is funny when you do shows like that, because I mean, it happens to me as well. You know, Somewhere in England was an album that, you know, I discovered in the mid 80s, but I didn't hold any, you know, regard or anything. But, you know, listening to it again over these last couple of weeks to prepare for the show, it truly wasn't as bad as
you thought it was. And I'm telling you, swear to God, Scout's Honor, I did not know the song Can't Stop Thinking About You until 5 yesterday. I had never heard it in my life. And I never heard it in my life. And it's fantastic. It is absolutely fantastic.
Even though Extra Texture is like at the bottom of the barrel for me for George Harrison albums.
Right.
Like I've said, every solo album has worthwhile material on there. And for me, the answer is at the end is in my top 10 of George Harrison solo songs. Mm. So just for that song alone, I think the album's worth it. So, but that's the thing that I try to say so much in these podcast shows is that this is art. You know, there is no final word on anything. Something that you listened to 10, 20 years ago that you didn't think much of, you could have a completely different impression of years later. You know, there's a lot of albums that are more respected later on. Like how many times have we brought up Ram, you know, or the early McCartney stuff, pre-Band on the Run now. And people have a different impression and it's respected more later on. So you have no idea what people are going to be thinking 10 years into the future or 50 years into the future about any of this music. All that you can say is how you feel today.
Right. And to your point, when you do podcasts like this, the content is there and somebody might discover your show that you did 6 months or 2 years ago. And that's there for them. And that's opened up a whole world of knowledge and music for them. And being though you as a show have moved past that, for that listener, that fan, they're going to follow, you know, Talk More Talk or things we said today and start their whole journey based on where they discovered it in your on your show, which is great.
Right. Yeah. So like I said, we're like, we're kind of like one big family. There's a web between all of us. So it's great, you know.
Yeah.
You know, your Ken, show can bring fans to my show. So, yeah.
Right. Ken, you've been fortunate to be able to, you know, be able to get product for like trivia games to giveaways and stuff like that. When were you able to start doing that? And are, you know, companies willing to, you know, give you product and authors willing to give you stuff for giveaways? I mean, is this something that's been easy for you to do over the years? Because I know that was one of my favorite parts of your shows, you know,
the giveaways.
Yeah.
When I first started doing the show on college radio on WNYT 40 years ago, I found a local record store that was willing to give me, you know, really cheap stuff like 45s, you know, to give away. But, you know, you have a contest on the air. People want to win anything. And so when I took the show to the New Jersey station, WDHA, I did the same thing. I found a local store there that gave me stuff. And it was a great way to promote the store, especially if they had Beatles stuff. And like there was one store, it was in Elmwood Park, New Jersey, Music Unlimited, music with a Z. And they got all the Beatles stuff. They got all the import McCartney CDs. They got all the CD singles of McCartney. And I would give away stuff like that. And there were people who loved to win that. And then I would give away through the stores. But I also went and approached and wrote to publishers for books, record companies. I took that upon myself, you know, to do all that. And in many cases, they were very willing to give me copies of everything, which is how I gave away all the stuff on the radio and now on my website, because I have 10 prizes to pick from every single week. And a lot of those prizes have been with me because I have too many copies of certain things. I've been around for quite a while, but I will tell you that it's getting more difficult to get physical product from record companies and from publishing companies.
Now,
they in fact, sometimes I don't even get promo copies. I get PDFs for books.
Yes.
You know,
you're right.
And for CDs or vinyl, they'll send me a zip file with MP3s instead. And I'd rather have the CDs.
Yeah, so you want to have the physical.
Yeah. So I'm probably going to have to look into maybe approaching Amazon or, I don't know, Tower has a new website, even though Tower, Tower Records, they don't have physical stores. But go to
something
like that.
Not in this country, anyway.
Yeah.
Not in this country.
But I would love to keep giving away great stuff. And, you know, the record companies are giving you less now. And same thing with publishing companies. And if it's anything that's independently published, there's no budget for that for the most part, you know. So that's it's getting harder and harder to give away physical stuff, but I still keep trying.
Yeah. What do you remember of your first day being a DJ? What do you remember about it? Were you, do you still remember that day, or do you remember how?
Well, first of all, I didn't start doing a Beatles show. I actually was on the college radio station doing other formats before the Beatles show, but they pulled the prank on me in my first show where from the production studio, they fed "You're Breaking My Heart" from Harry Nilsson into my headphones, and they made me think that was going out over the air.
Right.
And for those of you that don't know the song, and I'm really nervous. I'm really nervous, you know, because it's my first show and everything, and they're playing that prank on me, and I said, "What did I do? I'm gonna get fired," you know. But no, I loved it. I loved doing album rock at the college radio station. And the great thing about college radio is that they break a lot of new artists. I love doing that while playing a lot of the big rock newer acts of the time, which at that moment would have been something like The Police, for example, or Men at Work, you know, in the early 80s. I love doing that. And then I also did Top 40 on the weekends. I love Top 40 radio. I always have. I love hits. I've always been, you know, a Top 40 guy since I was a little kid. Top 40 got me into music. You know, it's how I was introduced to the Beatles in the first place. I love hits. I love commercial music. 60s and 70s and 80s are my favorite time overall, although I like a lot of stuff today. But I enjoyed doing every format of radio, and I really thought I was going to be a full-time DJ, either a top 40 DJ or an album rock DJ, but that never happened. I got to work as a producer for a company, an independent company called Radio Today, that eventually was bought out by ABC Disney, and it became part of the ABC Radio Networks, and I was a full-time producer in radio for almost 20 years for syndicated radio shows. So I did that while I was doing all my radio work at the same time. But but nothing has ever taken the place for me for all my Beatle work. You know, that's the crowning achievement of my career, and I'm really proud of all that I've accomplished. And every little thing is, you know, is my baby. It's something I developed from scratch. I had no idea. You know, it's interesting about the podcasting angle, because I was thinking, this is in 2009 when I started Fab Forum. I had lost both my jobs in radio at ABC and also on XM Radio. I was on two channels on XM. And when I was at WDHA, one of the DJs there that worked part-time was Eddie Trunk, who had his own heavy metal show. And I was watching him on VH1 with this new show, that metal show. And I said to myself, this is incredible. You could do a show just on one genre of music and just talk about it. And that gave me an idea to do a Beatles show, just talking about the Beatles, but mixing all the solo stuff. So, but that was a whole new world to me, podcasting. And Fab Forum, I think, is one of the first. I can never say it was, because you don't know what there was before that totally anyway. And then that led to Things We Said Today and Talk More Talk, which I'm still doing.
What channel on Sirius were you a producer on, Ken, just out of curiosity?
I wasn't a producer there. I produced my show Every Little Thing, which was on a channel called Fine Tuning.
Fine Tuning, Channel 76. It was a great channel.
Yeah. Ken Smith was the program director, and he knew this was an all eclectic music channel.
Great channel.
Classical music, progressive rock.
Great pop, channel.
And the music flowed together so well.
It was an awesome channel.
Yeah. I agree with you. Thank you. And I was also on the 60s channel, the 60s on 6.
Okay.
Because I used to do Beatle news breaks every single week. And I had something else just called Beatle Breaks, where I introduced a song or an album, told the story behind it, and then that would lead the station to go right into that song. So that's also something that were like evergreens that you can run at any time, whereas Beatle News you had to run that week. So I was busy on both those channels. I produced a lot of that stuff while I was at ABC. Once I lost my job at ABC, I had to get a studio at home, which is where you see this heaven that I'm living in right now. Real tiny room, but a lot of stuff comes out of it. So, yeah, but I can't believe it's 40 years ago.
Wow.
Because I'll tell you, it seems like 10 years ago that I graduated college to me. But life goes on very quickly.
Oh, does it ever, boy? Let me tell you.
Well, congratulations, Ken. We'll talk more about the Every Little Thing radio show towards the end of the show. But amazing, and wish you continued success on that, and hopefully those shows can continue for years and years to come, as long as you want them to, as long as you're still, you know, healthy and you have the desire to do them.
As long as I can make room in here, I can do
it. Yeah. Well, getting on to today's topic, like I said, this is part two of our series called A Friend Like You, which just focuses on Paul doing favors for his friends, if you want to say like that. Some friends, some commissions, and so on. But we're going to start with 1980, with the year that's when Paul takes Linda and Lawrence Juber, I believe, to France, Super Bear Studios, to work on Ringo's soon-to-be released album "Can't Fight Lightning," which know, as we all know, turns into "Stop and Smell the Roses." But there, they work on a few tracks. I think five to be exact, and two of them are his own penned songs, Attention and Private Property. As we know, Private Property became a single, but unfortunately did not chart. They did the cover of Sure to Fall. They also worked on You Can't Fight Lightning, which Paul does bass and drums on. And then they also did a run through of Love's Full Glory, which again will come up in later on in much the later. Show.
Yeah,
much later. And so, Ken, the songs that ended up being on Ringo's Stop and Smell the Roses, he had a couple producers on that album, but these are, I think, you know, is kind of, I pick on Attention a little bit, but Private Property, I think, is a fine song. Sure to Fall is a nice cover for Ringo as well. I mean, your thoughts on these songs?
Well, I absolutely love Attention. Mm-hmm. In fact, it is one of my favorite, you know, after 6 o'clock could be my favorite song that Paul wrote for Ringo. You don't feel that
Thank
way?
Thank you, Andy? Ken Michaels, for the win. Thank you.
Oh, you feel that way?
I 1,000% agree with you.
Okay. Because I know on Talk More Talk, you thought that these were throwaways, and I couldn't disagree with you more. Yeah. Like I said, the other Beatles knew how to write for Ringo very well. Yep. With the exception of Cooking in the Kitchen of Love, which we won't get into. But really, Private Property is a great opening track. I love how it kicks in with the horns there. Both songs are very catchy, very commercial, perfect in Ringo's vocal range. Mm-hmm. Attention is a very commercial song. And it's like I've said many, many times on my podcast, if that song was a single in 1974, 75, it would have been, I believe, a decent size hit right there. Short of Fall, I have a problem with. I know, okay. Short of Fall has got, you know, it's got the Beatle connection because the Beatles used to do the song live. They did it for BBC Radio. I love the song. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a Carl Perkins song and all. But, you know, it's one of those songs like Hey Baby, where everybody sings along all at once. Sings and you don't hear the lead vocals prominently. Yeah, I love the fact that Paul and Linda are on it. You know, it's a good recording, but I want to hear Ringo's voice solo, you know, when it comes to the verses, especially. And in the chorus, you can mix everybody together and you can make out Ringo's vocals, but it's all, I don't like those crowd type songs.
Right. Yeah, I get you. Kind of like you're all in the bar singing together.
Yeah. Like Here's to the Knights, for example. Yeah. You know, so I'm not crazy about Short of Fall. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That will disappoint some fans because of the Beatle connection. But I really loved Attention. You know, it's is one that of those songs.
Tom, is that the version of the Right Stuff label of that CD?
Right. Yeah. And it has the bonus tracks of Wake Up, Red and Black Blues, Brandy, and then Stop and Take the Time to Smell the Roses, and then You Can't Fight Lightning is on here, too.
And then is there another longer version of Attention that's edited as well on that, too?
No.
Must be
so this does, and then it has a handgun promo here as well, so this is out of print, unfortunately. I mean, you're gonna, if you want this, you'll be lucky if you find it at a used record store, or you're gonna pay, you know, $30 to $50 on eBay for this, you know. So,
you know, Andy, I recall there is a longer version of Private Property.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to place where I found
and
it,
Attention,
where it is. Mm-hmm.
And Attention.
But they're not on this disc. So
they're not,
I'm sure,
on that
there's
edition.
A bootleg. Yeah, I'm,
no,
you know, I'm sure there's a bootleg
a, there's
out
another,
there.
There's another version of that CD that a friend of mine has that has like another version. There's a bonus cut of Attention on there with an extra verse.
Okay.
And it's like
interesting,
like almost 5 minutes long.
Okay. Well, this came out in 94, it's interesting. We'll have to look for that. Okay, next up we move to 81, and we're talking about All Those Years Ago, as from the album that Ken and I just talked about, Somewhere in England, with our friends Kit O'Toole and Joe Mayo on our last Talk More Talk. And we've got All Those Years Ago. Like I said, this was a single, went to number 2. Paul, Linda, Denny, they contribute backing vocals on that. And, you know, number two hit really, for
I know, but they're so mixed down in it. I don't really consider that. I mean, I know he's on it, but they're so low in the mix that to me it's a George Harrison song. I mean, you want to throw
of course.
But I don't consider that a song with Paul and Linda on it because you can barely hear them if they're even audible. There's no overwhelming, there's Paul and Linda backing vocals on that song to my ears.
Right. Yeah, but you know, again, it's George, you know, and I'm sure, you know, he's got them there for, like you said, the Beatle connection. But you know, I'm sure, but George's ego wants to make sure that everybody knows this is a George song,
George record,
and he
yeah.
doesn't want, you know, Paul and Linda to overpower the backing vocals.
No.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I mentioned when we did our previous show on A Friend Like You that there are lots of songs in Paul's solo catalog where he contributes a backing vocal. And if you weren't told that, you wouldn't know it.
Right.
You know, or even times when he plays bass. And if you weren't told, you wouldn't know.
Exactly.
So, you know, the songs that I would pick as being the most important are ones that have as much involvement from Paul as possible, either as a songwriter or as a musician.
Right.
So I know that there are fans out there that will collect everything that any of the four of them have done in any capacity, me being one of them. But then at the same time, you know, that there are plenty of songs out there that it's like, you know, you're really just being a completist, you know, to get this.
Yeah.
But, you know, All Those Years Ago is a great song to me. It's a great tribute.
And if it wasn't for Betty Davis Eyes, it probably would have been a number one.
Oh, definitely. You know, when the timing was just right after John died. Right. But I like the song. I love the melody. I love George's guitar work in it. You know, it's kind of sad to think that it's like I hate to call it a retread, because it was originally going to be a song that George gave to Ringo with a different set of lyrics. So he took the same melody and wrote new lyrics for it. But still, the sentiment is great. The words are great in there. But like we said on Talk More Talk, sometimes he crams too many words into a line.
Yeah. I think it was said, you said syllables. Sometimes there's too many syllables in his line, you know. Yeah.
And I think wasn't that song not originally part of the initial track listing lineup?
Correct.
Of the album submitted for Warner Brothers? That song was not originally on the original list song track listing.
That is correct. Yep. So I believe it would have been February of 81 when they would have flown over to Friar Park to contribute their vocals to that.
Right.
So, but
drive over.
Well, yeah, I guess so. That's true. I that's right, because they would have been recording Tug of War in the
unless they were already in Montserrat.
In Montserrat,
if they were in Montserrat and then flew back. But I mean, unless they were home in the UK at the time.
Right, that's true. Moving to 82, we've got the song Mazzy, which is as we know Lawrence Juber's song, which they first started working on in 1978 during the Back to the Egg sessions. Then Lawrence did some more work on it for the Standard Time, which is the name of the album that those sessions there. And I think this was a MPL release as well. I think this was Paul's label was initial one of the initial MPL.
It was an EP. It was an EP.
Thank you, Ken. I believe we talked about this briefly the first time we had Lawrence Juber on our show, and you talked about the song Mazzy. And again, it's just a nice little number. I think it's just an instrumental. Paul's on bass. Again, it's just you know, nice little bit on there with the rest of the Wings members, and it's okay. I mean, I'm not the biggest instrumental fan, but I do enjoy it. You know, it's okay.
It's one of those things, like, I admired when Paul had the other members of Wings contribute their own songs, especially on Wings at the Speed of Sound. I wish he had done more of that towards the end, you know, of course, with Jimmy and Joe leaving, and then they had, new members come along. But it would have been nice to have Maisie on Back to the Egg.
I agree. Then we got 1982,
Waste and then your time.
Because the doggone girl is mine. So it's funny because this is the first song to be released from the McCartney-Michael Jackson collaborations, even though this was not written by Paul. This was just, I think, a Michael Jackson write.
Completely.
And yeah, and again, the number was a single, went to number two. So it had a lot of success. It started off their winning streak, because then they had even a bigger hit the following year. Mm-hmm. And but The Girl Is Mine, always enjoyed it. You know, I know it's corny in some places, you know, the doggone girl is mine, you know.
Well, it starts with the talking bit.
Yeah, well, I love the talking bit. I love the talking bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a lover, man. Not a fighter.
Exactly.
Oh, well, that's a little crazy.
She couldn't love another. Yeah,
that's a little.
But it is. It's a little corny, but it's fun though. I mean, and it's successful. It worked, you know, for them. And I always enjoyed this one. So, Ken,
well, I got to agree with you. You know, I love Michael Jackson as an artist. I think they worked really well together. Mm-hmm. You know, despite what happened with the music publishing, but. You know, I think vocally they sounded fantastic. The way they traded vocals with each other, the way they harmonized mm-hmm. with each other. That's what matters.
I'm going to buy some of your songs.
Yeah. Well, that came a little later.
Yeah.
As a record, I just think it was a lot of fun and they sounded fantastic together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of corny. It's kind of schlocky. There are people who would prefer the more up-tempo R&B Michael Jackson songs. But I think the two of them worked really well together. And right. even though I know I'll get a lot of heat for saying it, I wish they did more together. Just like I wish right. Paul did more with Stevie Wonder. So.
Agreed.
You know,
agreed.
I enjoyed it. You know, there's a good reason why it was a number two hit. The mm-hmm. public
I like
it. They heard it.
moving on, we've got 1983 and a song called The Honorary Council. Now this is for a film of the same name. Now, when you look this song up, you're going to see the John Williams name attached to it. You might think, oh, that's the very successful film composer of the Steven Spielberg, George Lucas films, and you're going to be uh-huh. wrong. It's not. But you know, there's a classical guitarist named John Williams, who very successful, and he ended up doing the finished product for this. There are demos out there of Paul doing this song, from my knowledge, and I haven't listened to them, unfortunately. I'm really curious to seek them out now to play mm-hmm. them. But you know, going back, I have played this a few times in the past, and then I played it the other night just to get re-familiar with it. It's very beautiful. I think his John Williams, you know, classic guitar playing is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Ken, did you know about this? Were you aware of this when it came out back then, or did it take a little time?
I remember reading about it in Beatle Monthly, but mm-hmm. I didn't know how to get it.
Right.
You know, unlike now where there's software where you can lift things off YouTube if you want to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't have that luxury. We didn't in those days. Mm-hmm. But I did have friends that found things for me. And I did have a friend that sent me a cassette copy of the song.
Okay.
So that's the only way that I even heard it back then.
Right.
But yeah, it's a really lovely, beautiful instrumental. And it's mm-hmm. one that's certainly worth picking up. You know, it's... I can certainly hear it fit in a movie, though I've never seen the movie, actually. But he's a great guitarist. There's no doubt mm-hmm. about it. He was perfect to make this record. And I think it's one of those songs that McCartney fans, if they haven't heard it, should seek it out.
Mm-hmm.
They could probably hear it on YouTube. I haven't checked.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's where I played it.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Going on, then we've got... Let's see here. Sorry. Probably this is going to give away the countdown, but arguably my favorite of the batch.
It's in there.
It's in there. But on the wings of a nightingale for the EB84 album. This was a single. Again, I think this went to 50 here in the States. Hmm. And, you know, Everly Brothers, Dave Edmonds, we have to thank for this one, because he approached Paul to write something for it, because he was producing that album. Paul said, give me a week and we'll see what we come up with. And then he produced this wonderful, or he wrote this wonderful track, probably sent them a demo to follow along to. And this is just a favorite of mine. I still can't believe I don't have this CD yet. I'm going to, you know, get it at some point here in the next couple of weeks. But lovely song. And Ken, I know this is a favorite of yours as well.
Without a doubt. It's one of the best songs Paul's ever written for anybody else. But what I liked the most about On the Wings of a Nightingale was that it was so suitable for the Everly Brothers. The harmonies was worked out, you know, kind of like Come and Get It was so perfect for Badfinger. It's the same thing with On the Wings of a Nightingale. And certainly, well, I hope we've all heard the demo. I know Dylan Seavey loved it.
The demo is better than their version.
Oh, come on.
It is.
It's the Everly Brothers. Great harmonies there. But...
Yeah, but it's Paul, so that's why Paul wins. So
yes, but if it wasn't for the Everlys, we might not have had Paul.
I know. Yeah. Their version's good too. Their version's good is great too. But Paul's demo version is great. I just wished it was out there in a little bit better quality, because the quality of it's not great.
Yeah. Gotcha. Then we've got the B side to Do They Know It's Christmas, and that's Feed the World. You know, Paul and a few people that were approached to contribute to this song as well. Paul was one of them, I think, along with David Bowie. They were both approached to you know, sing on the main song, Do They Know It's Christmas, but were unable to. Then they sent spoken wet messages, and that ended up being part of the B-side, which it's okay. I mean, I don't think it's anything special. I think at one point, Paul's laughing while he's doing the message, which I don't think is really maybe appropriate for the charity or whatnot, but it also for the record. But however, this was the record that dethroned Mull of Kintyre for the most selling single in the UK. So, you know, Paul has credit to dethroning himself in a way, maybe, but not really. I know, but he's on it. So, but Ken,
it's been a long time since I listened to it, and I know you know it's important to bring this out. Some people think, because they see his name associated with Do They Know It's Christmas, that he's on the record, but he's not. Do They Know It's Christmas? No, I certainly don't mind dethroning Mull of Kintyre, because I think it was a brilliant record, and just like We Are the World, I think was a brilliant record too. Yeah, it's just a shame that Paul couldn't be on Do They Know It's Christmas on the record.
Right.
But again, for the completist or the people that love that song, you know, you got to have it, I suppose. But yeah, there's another charity record that we'll get to, which I think is really important in this show.
Absolutely. Moving to 1985, then we've got Twice in a Lifetime, which again, for our film, and Ken, you had said that you actually went to go see the film just to hear this, because there was no soundtrack, I don't think, for this, or at least it wasn't released as a single either.
I don't think to this day there's ever been a soundtrack for Twice in a Lifetime, but I went there for the primary purpose. I probably read it in Beatles Monthly, you know, or Beatle Fan or Good Day Sunshine, one of those news sources, and I went there just for that reason. And I love the song at the end, and if you ever have watched the movie, they don't give you the full version of it. Okay. And that even came out as a bootleg taken from the movie, the short version. So I never really heard the full version, I think, until it
93
Pipes of Peace as a bonus
track. 93. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a really good song. And Paul has this incredible knack for writing really good film music. And some of them have been rejected.
And luckily for us, maybe it was, you know, as we're talking about Beautiful Night, you know, was one of those films to get, or one of those songs to get rejected. And then, you know, what we got with the finished product, what we got, I think, probably was 10 times better of what, you know, he may have done in, you know, back in the mid 80s there for the for that song. But anyways,
remind me, Tom, where was Beautiful Night? What was that for? What film?
The Princess Bride.
I thought Once Upon a Long Ago was.
Same. What? I think both.
Both of them?
Okay.
Both of them. Yes. Yep. Both of them.
Huh. Okay. I didn't hear that about Beautiful Night. Yep. Okay. Yep. Very good.
All right. 1985, he has another song for a film. Was a big hit. I mean, his last top 10 up until the Kanye stuff. This can be either in this list or not on the list. You know, it's in the McCartney canon for sure. And we're talking about Spies Like Us. There was a soundtrack for this movie as well. However, the song was not on the soundtrack, which is kind of weird because you figure you're putting it out to sell records. So you're not going to include, you know, the big hit song, you know, on your soundtrack, which I thought was weird. Unless that was the deal Paul had, you know, with the studio or the director, you know, so.
I never understood that. It makes no sense. Right. It's like if Live and Let Die was not on the soundtrack, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Then we've got 1986, and we're talking about the Anti-Heroin Project and Paul's Simple As That, which to me is just a simple song. Again, I don't know when you were first aware of this, Ken, but I don't think it appeared on CD until the 93 Pipes of Peace as well. I'm not sure.
Gotta tell me what the name of the song is. Tell them what the name of the song is.
Yeah, simple. As simple as that.
Yeah, I'm trying simple to remember the first time that I had it because I know that I played it fairly soon after it came out, so I must have had the vinyl.
You had that compilation with parody, whatever the Anti-Heroin Project or whatever that release was on.
It's a double album, various artists all contributing tracks, and I really like the song. It's funky. Is very simple. It's true, but it's reggae. Right. I love reggae. Paul does reggae stuff. And it's very catchy. And just the fact that he contributed something, this is like something extra to collect along the way, along with his albums and singles, and for a good cause. So, and his vocals are great in it, you know.
True. Very true.
Oh, they usually are.
Another favorite of mine was we moved to... 1988, and we're talking about this Johnny Cash record from here, Waters from the Wells of Home, and we're talking about the song New Moon Over Jamaica, which was co-written with Johnny Cash and Tom T. Hall. I believe this was started while they were vacationing in Jamaica. Oddly enough, or ironically enough, I should say. But again, I really dig this track. I love that all three of them are, you know, contributed to this. And you know, I kind of wish, you know, Paul and Johnny Cash did, you know, a couple more things together. I thought they worked together very well, and they seemed like a good fit together. So, but Ken, was this one that you were able to hear soon
fairly
after
soon.
Its release?
I probably saw it listed in Beatle Monthly and then went hunting for it. But I liked it instantly. Just the fact that it's, you know, an icon, another icon like Johnny Cash. And I had become familiar with Tom T. Hall mainly because of his top 40 hit, I Love, back in the 70s. Oh, okay. So I liked the fact that it was the three of them singing together. My only complaint is that with any of these duets or trios, I wish that there was, you know, more of Paul, more of a balance between them. It's primarily Johnny Cash that you hear. And nice harmonies on there, but I wish there was more lead vocal coming from Paul. Ironic thing about New Moon Over Jamaica, I know on the radio series of Ubu Jubu, they did play the song. Originally, I guess it was like more of a reggae song. There's a reggae version of New Moon Over Jamaica, but this became more of a country song, you know, once Johnny was involved and Tom.
And that version was just Paul, right? Or was it also with the other two as well? I can't remember because I know
I read that
it was just Paul. Okay.
I think so. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I know they weren't on there vocally.
Right.
You know, Johnny Cash.
Yeah. So that's why I question with the fact that, you know, if Paul's doing this demo, was he doing it just for a run through, or did he already have this song completed? And did, you know, how was Johnny Cash's and Tom T. Hall's, you know, what did they contribute to it? You know what I mean? I would have loved to learn, you know, a little bit more of that, the making of that song for sure. So
there's a lot of songs like that in Paul's catalog where you wonder how much Paul wrote, how much other people he collaborated.
Right.
Have to wait for lyrics too, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to get to that here in a little bit as well. But first, we're going to talk about the Ferry Cross the Mersey. 40. I got the 7-inch, you know, you see with Andy with the 12-inch. Andy, you know a lot about this. I mean, you've had friends that have talked about that before. Why don't you just give the rundown again for this charity
I
single.
I do. This was a charity single that was put together after the horrible crush between Liverpool and Hillsborough on April 15th, 1989, where 96 people died. And it was a real tragedy, and one that was in litigation for decades up until about 10 years ago with who was at fault, promoters, the venue, and having, you know, lived in Liverpool for 2 years, I got to hear a lot about this experience firsthand from people that watched this match, people that were involved with this match. So I bought this when I was over there, this 12-inch single. And, you know, obviously it's, you know, this is one of those, you know, appearances by Paul where he kind of, he dominates more of this one than more than others, even though it's shared with Holly Johnson and stuff. But right. Paul and Jerry Marsden is also on this re-recording as well. But Paul's stamp is all over this re-recording from the charity tribute version here that he did with everybody else. The Christians, Holly Johnson, Marsden, and Stock Waterman. And it's just a great, great version of an update, you know, an updated version of the classic 60s track. And it's just so well done. Paul's vocals on it are just, you know, you have to. And Ken's been to Liverpool, so you feel it. You feel it when you're there, and you're walking by the Mersey, and you play this song. It's just in the air. It's in the air. It's just, I can't explain it. But once you've been there, and you hear this song, and you know about the context of what went into this song and the horrible thing that became out of it, the fact that they were able to do some good with it for the charity record is just, you know, it's beautiful, really.
Yeah.
Ken, you want to add something to it?
I want to say it's hard to top what you just said there, Andy, but I consider it one of the most essential side projects of Paul's career. Not only because it's a charity record for a great cause there, but you've got two Liverpool legends there, Paul McCartney and Jerry Marsden, on the same record.
Yep.
And it was Jerry Marsden who sang lead on it, and Jerry and the Pacemakers made it a hit in 1964. And not only that, but maybe we'll do this in A Friend Like You Part 3 or 4, but there was a follow-up single that came out in 2012, which was for the same charity.
The same charity.
He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. Yeah. And Jerry Marsden is in that, though not as much as in Ferry Across the Mersey.
No.
And Paul's also in He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. He does sing towards the end, not nearly as much as in Ferry Across the Mersey, but he plays electric guitar in it.
Yeah, he plays the guitar on the outro, which is does a good job and, you know, of that as well.
But Paul's vocals are great on Ferry.
They're great, and really to tie it in, you see, just to demonstrate what I was talking about. Now this was in '89, in 2000. That was in 2011 or 12, right, Ken?
12.
That was still going on. In over there, they have this thing, though, JFT 96, Justice for the 96. It was a huge, huge, big thing every year. I mean, and that charity, the re-recording of He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother, was kind of when that kind of wall kind of finally was solved and the families were all compensated. And it was really the, you know, the venues, they had responsibility, claimed responsibility for the disaster.
Right. But I often say that sometimes I have a problem with a lot of charity records where you've got so many singers, then they all get one line,
right?
You know, but this is the exact opposite because you hear quite a lot of Paul and Jerry Morrison. And just the fact that they're longtime friends, both from great bands of the 60s, both managed by Brian Epstein, both produced by George Martin, all the connections between Paul and Jerry Morrison, it's nice to have them on this record, and then He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. So it was very well done, Ferry Across the Mersey, in this particular case.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Cool. Moving on with 89, we've got the album Spike right here, Elvis Costello. As we know, they had Paul had a few songs with Elvis Costello that they co-wrote together for Flowers in the Dirt, and now with Spike, it was the same thing. I believe there's three songs on there that has Paul McCartney's, whether as a co-writer or playing bass as well. So we've got Veronica, we've got Pads, Paws, and Claws, and we got This Town. Now, Veronica, he's the co-writer, he plays bass. Pads, Paws, and Claws, just the co-writer. And then This Town, he contributes bass to. Really good, solid album from Elvis Costello here. One of my favorites of that later period. Ken, thoughts on these? Veronica is, I think, was his biggest hit at that time. So good album.
In terms of how high it charted, it's still his biggest hit.
Still his biggest hit, yeah.
It may not be his most well-known song overall, because there are certain rock tracks from him that are, you know,
right,
that he's better known for. But as far as singles go, in the U.S., Veronica went to 19, which was his highest charting
top
single.
20.
Yeah. I love Veronica. You know, I think it's such a good, catchy tune. You know, the thing about these particular songs, they certainly feel more like Elvis Costello heavy songs. Whereas the songs that Elvis wrote with Paul, the ones that ended up on Paul's albums, you kind of feel like it was either very evenly balanced or weighting a little bit more in Paul's direction. To me, anyway, you know, Pads, Paws, and Claws is more Elvis to me than Paul.
Yes.
This Town, you know, might be a little more balanced. I don't know. Probably more Elvis. But I enjoy all the songs that they wrote together. I've been getting more into Shallow Grave, which we'll talk about later. Yeah. But, I like them. And I wish that the two of them had continued to work together. I think they're a really good team. Would have been nice to have just the whole album together instead of always sharing, you know, a few tracks on Paul, a few tracks on Elvis. So.
Yeah, and I would have loved to have been in that conversation with, you know, it's like, you know, okay, we're getting divorced, so you can have those kids and I'll have these kids over here, you know, or, you know, I mean, not really a divorce, but, you know, I mean, he's got three songs or three or four songs, and then, you know, Elvis takes three or four songs and puts them on his, you know, on his records, you know, so it would have been fun to hear the conversation with, you know, okay, you don't mind if I take this one, do you? Because maybe I wrote more lyrics, you know, than Paul did or whatever. But excuse me, good tracks nonetheless. I do like Pads, Paws, and Claws, and I do like Veronica. This Town is fine, fine. But yeah, Veronica is just a well crafted, well written song, you know, and I guess it deserves to be maybe his highest charted song here in the States, because it is such a well crafted song, and you know, and I do feel like it's a Paul song in a way, you know, like I do feel Paul's stamp on that song, you know, but I enjoy it, yeah, always have.
It's you know, Elvis Costello has never been one to have hit records or be embraced on the top 40 charts. It's always been rock stations, and even the more conservative rock stations over the years don't play them. It's only the more hip ones, the ones that play alternative rock, they embrace Elvis Costello. And I can tell you, because I used to work, like I said, at the ABC Radio Networks. We had, still is, it still exists under a different name, a classic rock show called Flashback, which was very thematically driven too. And I was always told, you know, there are certain artists that you shouldn't play on classic rock to keep it as safe as possible. Elvis Costello was one of them. It's very tough to get the Talking Heads in there too. But there are certain songs like Allison or Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding, Oliver's Army. Those songs could have been... Those could have been hits to me anyway, if they were given a lot of airplay. But
Now he's telling radio stations not to play Oliver's Army because of one particular word in there. But that's another tale. So that was the 80s. So now we're moving to the 90s. And we've got Paul contributing a track that I believe that was recorded during the Choba sessions. And that's It's Now or Never. That was recorded for the Last Temptations of Elvis, which, you know, might be the first time he'd given a song to like an album like this, or, you know, a contribution where just all other artists, you know, contributing, you know, songs for one particular artist. just being Elvis Presley, because then you know he's also done songs for Buddy Holly compilation.
Ian Dury.
And then you got Ian Dury, and then Fats Domino, which we've talked about in part one as well. So, but this, I think this is It's Now or Never is one of the better songs to come out of the Choba sessions. I don't know about you, Ken, but I think he sounds wonderful vocally on this track.
I love it a lot. Sounds good. You know. Yeah. I think his vocals are fine. I think his vocals were great throughout the whole Russian album, really.
Mm-hmm.
This has a very loose feel, but then again, so does the whole Russian album.
Right.
You know, it really sounds like a well-oiled rehearsal.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, but it's funny because there's such a huge difference to me between the Russian album and Run Devil Run. Because Run Devil Run is so tight and polished and very rehearsed and so perfect, and you feel like with the Russian album you're walking in on a rehearsal, but they're all very good takes, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Two different feels on both of them, but It's Now or Never. Paul and Elvis, they're natural together, you know.
Right.
He sounds so great doing Elvis Presley music, and it's fine. It kind of sounds exactly what you'd think it would sound like.
Mm-hmm.
So
agreed. Moving to 91, we get the next release from Elvis Costello after Spike, and that we got Mighty Like a Rose, which has two tracks on there that were co-written by Paul, and that's Soul Like Candy and Playboy to a Man. Now, Paul doesn't appear on the album musicianship wise, but again, it's the co-writes from that from the time where Paul and Elvis were writing together back in the late 80s there, in 87, 88, I believe it was. And Elvis took those songs and turned them into his own. I absolutely adore Soul Like Candy. I love what he did to that track. And Playboy to a Man, you know, isn't too shabby either. Now, I do enjoy those tracks on the demo disc of the Flowers in the Dirt. You know, I love what they did there, but I think Elvis, you know, did a fine job with those tracks on his own.
See, I'm not the biggest Elvis Costello fan, so I don't know these songs. I know the Paul demos, so the demos I enjoy, but I'm not I don't know them as Elvis Costello songs.
Right.
I don't know any of these, really.
Yeah. You might like his Soul Like Candy. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, is it better than the demo?
Well, that's I'm not going to say it's better.
Yeah. We're a little biased here.
Right.
Yeah. When it comes to Paul, slightly.
Yeah. Right. It's tough for me to get into some of this stuff where he's not vocally present on a lot of it, whether he's a producer or a co-writer. If he's not on it and I can't tell he's on it, then I'm not really into it. So, you know, other than the songs we've talked about, the Ringo stuff, the songs where he wrote for them, like Attention, you know that's a Paul McCartney song. You know it is. So it's just, for me, it's just some of these are just a little bit tough to get into. I mean, they're good songs, but, you know, it's not Paul. So they're not for me.
Fair enough.
Well, I agree with you, Tom, about So Like Candy. I think that's a fine song. And there's one case where, you know, the beginning melody, da 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 da, that sounds very Paul to me, you know. But I would imagine that the lyrics were very heavily Elvis. But you know, you try to figure out what did Elvis write, what did Paul write, and unless either one of them will reveal that to us, we won't know. But
I see, like, Here Lies the Records That She Scratched. I see that as more like an Elvis type thing. I don't really see that as a Paul. You know what I mean? There's a lot of lines in there that I think that I'm guessing that's more of an Elvis track than it is lyric-wise than a Paul track, in my
lyrically.
Thinking.
But when you're so used to McCartney's melodies, it's almost like sometimes you can pick them out in these songs here.
Right.
It's almost like I was telling people when the Liverpool Oratorio came out, if all I heard was the melody, I would say, oh, that's McCartney there. Even though it's a classical work, it's not a pop song, I hear elements of McCartney. There's something about, you get so used to in your ears what his style
is
like.
What his style is, you can pick it out.
Yeah.
You can pick it out.
Yep. Yeah.
Playboy Agreed. To a man. I love the demo. They sound great together. Yes. You know, on that. Definitely. And I like Agreed. Elvis's version too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's gonna move to 92 and 95. And these are for the last two 10cc records. 92, the album called Meanwhile, and we've got the song Don't Break the Promise, which Paul was the co-writer with Eric Stewart during the Press to Play sessions. And then we go to 95 for Mirror Mirror, which then featured the track Yvonne's the One, which we talked about on your show, Ken Michaels Radio YouTube channel, which we'll bring up again a little later on. And that's, again, Yvonne's the One. So those two albums, Eric Stewart brings out the co-write, which it doesn't look like they were being used by Paul. So Don't Break the Promise is fine. Yvonne the One is, I think, one of his great unreleased tracks. However, I'm not the biggest fan of what Eric Stewart did with the song.
Mm. No. Yeah, I would never have thought Yvonne's the One would be a reggae song. I love the way that Paul did it. It's so perfect just the way it is with his falsetto voice in there. It's a perfect recording and it's a great melody.
It's so good you don't even need to listen to the 10cc version, which I never have. I never will.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
He's very open-minded, isn't he, Tom?
Yes, he is.
I'm very open-minded, but when it comes to Paul, all bets are off.
Okay. I'm glad that it officially came out, even though I believe when Press to Play does come out in an archival box that he better put out Yvonne's the One.
Oh.
He better.
But
he better. Absolutely is right.
That was like, what was that? My second favorite of all the unreleased so far McCartney songs.
Yes. Yes, it was.
You know, if you like So Bad or you like the falsetto Paul, and I think I even said in our show that it almost reminds me of Think of Laura. From Christopher Cross.
Christopher Cross.
Yvonne's the One.
Yeah, good comparison.
Yeah, Don't Break the Promise is an okay song. I like it.
Yeah.
Paul's version was reggae-ish, you know? I don't think I've listened to the 10cc version enough to judge it, but, you know, I'm glad that Eric Stewart wants to do something with these songs and put them out because they shouldn't be just laying around, you know?
Yeah,
who knows when Paul would put out this stuff, and you know, don't try to figure out Paul because you know he's not totally predictable.
Correct. Going to 1996, and we've got one of Andy's favorites, and that's the Ballad of the Skeletons.
That means it's not right.
Right. Exactly. Which we have, you got three different versions on here. You got a 746, a 407, and yeah. So, again, Allen Ginsberg here asking Paul, I believe the story is he asked Paul for a guitarist for this, you know, for this poem. And, you know, Paul, knowing him for so long, I guess he just, you know, suggested himself, you know, obviously. And, I like the guitar playing on here. Ken, I don't know what you think about this track. I don't know if we've ever talked about this before, but I dig it. I like how, you know, how Alan is talking about people's insecurities or, you know, or talking about them, making you look at yourself in the mirror. And really, it's a very thoughtful, you know, look at the humanity in a way. And, I really enjoy it. I really like it.
Well, it's like another side to Paul where let's just say you're in a club and there's a poet there that wants to read one of his poems and you invite somebody on stage, play guitar, just play whatever you feel like to it.
Mm. Right.
You know, I have a good friend, Stephen Kalinich, who I don't know if I ever talked about him, but he's written songs with members of the Beach Boy
connection. Absolutely.
And he does a lot of poetry readings. And in fact, Lawrence Juber is good friends with Stephen. And there are times when Stephen will do a poetry reading and Lawrence is just accompaniment. accompany him
mm-hmm.
on guitar, whatever he feels like playing. He did one where he actually played In My Life in the background. Mm. But, you know, this is kind of what would Paul play in the background while Alan is reading this poem. So you mm-hmm. got to look at it from that perspective. It's not like he's coming up with the poetry, but it's right. just a whole other approach of what Paul would do. And I suppose, you know, it's for him to show that, you know, he's good friends with this famous poet.
Right.
It's kind of hip for him to do this kind of thing. And I like it for that reason. Is it something that I would play over and over again? Probably not.
Right.
But it's just another side to Paul. You know, you wonder what certain musicians would do if they were told kind of on the spot, what would you play to accompany these words? And
right.
I like it for that reason.
Well, Kalinich is he's the co-writer of the song of which this show is named after, Friend Like right. You, on Getting on It Over My Head, on Brian
That's
Wilson's
right.
On his solo album of 2004. So, I mean, there you go.
Well, a great big duh to me for not thinking about that as we're doing this show. Yep. He wrote that with Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And Paul's on that. Paul's on
right.
that.
Right. Yep. He wrote it about his friendship with Brian, not about
right.
Paul.
Right. Right. About Brian. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But, and I'm glad that that's not even on the list, is it? Well, that's
What's
in the
that?
2000s.
That's in the 2000s. Right.
That's like later. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We did that in the first episode of the series.
Oh, we talked about A Friend Like You, the song?
Yeah, we sure did.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Sticking with 96, we've got the next album from Elvis Costello, and that's All This Useless Beauty. And the reason why we have this on here is because Elvis does his version of Shallow Grave, which again was another co-write with Paul. Now, the demo version of this was included on the Record Store Day cassette, which, you know, I should have grabbed what it's over there right now. But then it was also included in the
download. It was a download. Yes,
in the dirt. You know that we won't, you know, talk about. But anyways, which is fine. I like what Elvis does here. Ken, I think you're going to give your opinion on this. I think you said you like this one.
I like it more now. I didn't pay too much attention to it originally when it first came out. I was kind of disappointed that there was only the one song there that he wrote with Paul on that album. So. You know, it certainly has a rocking sound, Elvis's version. But I love the demo that did come out.
Yes.
I think they sound great on it together.
Demo, that demo is great.
Yeah. Right.
I'm really getting into more now. I think a lot of people are listening to demos and, you know, unpolished recordings and how songs started out. Even if it sound quality wise sounds like, you know, you're just singing right into a cassette player or something, so I like it for that reason. But they sounded great together on that song. I wish that they had maybe worked on it more as a studio recording together.
Okay, sticking with 96, with you'll see the release of Carl Perkins' Go Cat Go. Now this was big because it's got the song My Old Friend, which Carl Perkins wrote on his last day on Montserrat. And they recorded it on that last day as well, with Paul helping out with vocals. Beautiful track where he's just showing his appreciation for being invited to work with Paul, and very moving. And I think this was, didn't Linda tell him that this was the last thing that John had said to him, like my old friend or something like that?
That's
you know,
the story.
So he was really moved.
Yeah. Yeah, Linda said
Think of me now and again, an old friend.
Yeah. No, Linda said to Carl, how did you know?
Right.
Carl said, what are you talking about? How did you know? And then Linda said those are the last words that John said to Paul, because Paul was welling up, you know, when he heard those words. But this song has a lot of history because, like you said, it was recorded in 1981. Didn't come out till, what is it, 1999?
Go 96.
Okay. Yeah. And for years and years, we heard about this song. It was in Beatles Monthly.
Right. But we never heard it.
It was written about in Club Sandwich. And you kept on hearing that Paul was touching it up. He was doing more work on it. And it just took forever for this song to come out. So finally, it comes out on Go Cat Go. It's a really nice song. But if you want a song that has a lot of Paul involvement, he played just about every instrument on it.
Yeah.
Sang it with Carl. You look at the credits and Paul plays every instrument, guitar, piano, bass. I think he plays drums too, you know, and I'm sure Carl played guitar, but it's just the two of them and nobody else. And it's wonderful. It's, you know, it's Carl giving thanks to Paul for spending time with him. And Carl is a dear, was a dear, sweet man. He appreciated the fact that Paul invited him there. And Tug of War, as we know, became one of Paul's greatest albums.
Sure did.
It's great to have Carl and Stevie Wonder on there and Ringo.
Right. Now, this album is also important because it also features the other three Beatles as well. So you've got John's Blue Suede Shoes from the Live Piece Toronto. And you got Carl Perkins and Ringo doing Honey Don't. And then you've got Carl and George Harrison doing Distance Makes No Difference with Love.
Which is a gem.
Yeah.
That song is an absolute gem. Distance Makes No Difference with Love.
Definitely recommend this. Yeah.
Yeah. And Honey Don't, by the way, it's a mixture of Ringo live doing it with a vocal from Carl that was inserted into the recording to make it a duet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're winding down here. So we move up to 98 with we're talking about Vertical Man. Ringo Starr's Vertical Man. And Paul appears on backing vocals for three tracks. And it's La Di Da, I Was Walking, and What in the World. And like you were talking about, Andy, with him being on backing tracks, sometimes, you know, Paul's vocals are getting lost in the crowd because there's also other, you know, backing vocalists on those tracks, I believe, as well. So you really can't tell necessarily if it's Paul's there or not, because it's just, you know, buried in with the mix.
No,
you know, but it's cool that he's there, though.
He's credited, but it doesn't make it doesn't make La-Di-Da any better of a listening experience, you know, to me.
Yeah, right. Actually, Tom, What in the World? Paul plays bass.
He does play bass. Okay, I didn't write that down. Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Okay. Yep. Those are all wonderful songs, because I think Vertical Man was a great album overall, because the songs are really great. And obviously Mark Hudson brought into it, you know, more of a Beatles sound, bringing back a Beatles sound for Ringo. And you can tell on so many of the tracks that, you know, you can feel it, because, you know, he's a Beatle baby. Mark Hudson. But they're all good songs. But again, in most cases, if you weren't told Paul was on it, would you know?
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Moving to 1998 now with the Wide Prairie release. We've got several tracks here. Now, these were I'm just including the tracks that were recorded in the 1980s and 90s. Now, we've got
because it got Wide a 98 Prairie release. Right.
Correct. We got a Wide Prairie. We got The Light That Comes From Within. We got White Coated Man, Love's Full Glory, Cow, and Appaloosa. So those tracks were recorded in the 80s and 90s on the CD. Now, just to give you a little bit here, we got Wide Prairie. He does bass, piano, organ, and backing vocals. The Light That Comes Within, he does bass, guitar, piano, backing vocals again. White Coated Man, we've got him on bass, drums, guitar. Love's Full Glory, we got bass, guitar, drums. Cow, we've got bass, guitar, drums, vocals. And then Appaloosa, we've got drums, bass, and guitars on there. So a lot of contributions from Paul on this record from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, as we know, because there's some Wings stuff on here as well. So, you know, I cherish this record. I think Linda was very underrated. Vocally.
Love's Full Glory is the best all time of all time. Yes. Linda Paul, that song is absolutely tremendous. And really the kind of the pinnacle, really, I think, of the
highlight for me on this CD is that. Yeah.
Absolutely. But obviously it goes back to the 80s, Ken, right? Love's Full Glory?
Yes. Yeah.
1980, I think.
Yeah. With and the Stop and Smell the Roses. With the Love Stop and Smell the Roses.
So it was almost 20 years old by the time it did come out eventually in 98.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Because
they did some more work on it later on, but I think it was Lloyd Green who did the pedal steel guitar. Yep. Fantastic, fantastic work on that, and yeah, brilliant stuff. Love it. So, and then we'll finish off the 1990s with a song called "A Room with a View" from the 20th Century Blues, the songs of Noel Coward. Here's the CD right here. Uh-huh. Again, this, you know, when you hear Paul do "A Room with a View," okay, from this is what, 1998, did I say? You wish "Kisses on the Bottom" would have jumped right to "Kisses on the Bottom." That.
Yeah, you know, gotta wait a decade and a half.
Yeah, but I mean, because his vocals, I mean, obviously, look, he does a great job on "Kisses on the Bottom," but his voice is even stronger here and could have probably done even a 10 times better job with those vocals. And just in my opinion, you know, I still like that album a lot. But, you know, what he does here is absolutely fantastic. I love this yes. track, "A Room with a View."
Home run track.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it falls into that same category of like dance hall music. Like "Honey Pie," that kind of thing.
Yep.
You gave me the answer. And
Green music for the win, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not as super critical about his voice on "Kisses on the Bottom" as a lot of people are. But you know, I do treasure this particular track. And we didn't really talk all that much about the Linda songs, but no, I would like to add, and I definitely agree with both of you guys, "Love's Full Glory." Aces. It's possibly the best song on here. I love the fact that Paul collected all these songs. It's everything you could possibly want from Linda McCartney that she sings lead to, all on one collection from the 70s on up. But and I like the fact that she did a lot of songs for animal rights, like Cow. And "The Light That Comes From Within" also has James McCartney playing guitar on the song. But I think special attention should be given to "Appaloosa" because Paul plays everything on that song and Linda sings. It's kind of almost like "My Old Friend" in a way, like we were just talking about that. But it was recorded in March of 1998, and that was a month before Linda passed.
Before she,
So it's probably the last song that she ever recorded. And it was all for her love of Appaloosa horses and inspired by an Indian tribe, Nez Perce, or Perce. And it's a very catchy song, kind of repetitious, but it's interesting to listen to because of Paul's involvement in playing all the instruments and lead guitar stuff. You know, the backing tracks are all Paul. So that's a very interesting song right there.
Yep.
Certainly worth listening to. And everyone should have a copy of "White Prairie."
I agree.
Because, Paul's all over it. But, you know, you mentioned "Love's Full Glory." There's another song on the compilation, which Paul is not on at all, called "Endless Days," which is very pretty as well. I consider that, you know, one of the highlights, too. I like the ballads. She did a really good job on those couple of songs.
Yeah. Cool. All right, so that's the list. Now, if you guys, you know, found a track that maybe we forgot on here, please leave it in the comments, and we will definitely check those tracks out. And we also did a little top 10 for this list as well. And Andy, were you able to get 10 tracks out of this?
I could get 10. I got 10. Yeah, and I'll just rip through them real quick. 10, "It's Now or Never." 9, "Private Property." 8, "Veronica." 7, "Love's Full Glory." 6, "Spies Like Us." 5, "My Old Friend." 4, "Simple as That." 3, "On the Wings of a Nightingale." 2, "Ferry Across the Mersey." And 1, "Attention."
Wow. Andy, you and I have to hang out more often.
yes, we do.
I think you should be on my YouTube channel a little bit more often.
Okay.
There you go.
All you got to do is email me, brother, and I'll be happy to pop on.
Okay.
All right, Ken, how about you?
All right. Before I read my list, I just want to say that, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, it's kind of tough for me to look at songs that Paul released himself as a single or on his albums as being in this category. You know, Spies Like Us is in my top 10, but
right,
I thought this would be mainly what I call side projects, you know, work for others. But yes, I know it was for a film, but it's still, you know, a McCartney release for me. But anyway, number 10, I had a tie. I had to put Love's Full Glory and Appaloosa as a tie there. 9, So Like Candy. 8, My Old Friend. 7, Veronica. 6, Ferry Cross the Mersey. 5, The Girl Is Mine. 4, Twice in a Lifetime. I really think that's a great ballad. 3, Spies Like Us. 2, Attention. And number 1, On the Wings of a Nightingale.
Yeah. Good. Very good. You know what? I had that thought process like you did, Ken. So I didn't add Spies Like Us to this list because I just wanted to give more attention
to the other tracks.
I mean, people that listen to this show know that I'm a huge Spies Like Us fan anyways. So I just want to say let's give the you know, attention to these other tracks.
Give attention to attention. Nice one.
Yes, you should, because yes, you don't like it. Ken and I are gonna make you like it. How about that?
All right. Number 10. Right. <That's fine. laughs> Number 10, I've got The Ballad of the Skeletons. Number 9, I got A Room with a View. Number 8, I got The Playboy to a Man. Number 7, I've got It's Now or Never. Number 6, I got Soul Like Candy. Number 5, I got New Moon over Jamaica. Number 4, I've got Veronica. Number 3, I've got My Old Friend. Number 2, I've got Love's Full Glory. And then number 1, like Ken, I think number 1 was On the Wings of a Nightingale. So
right.
my number 1 as well. So just superb track from Paul and perfectly written for the Everly Brothers.
Yeah.
So
that's nice. Love's Full Glory. We all voted for.
Yeah.
It's
excellent.
Gotta be.
Yeah. And I just love the dreamy aspect of her vocals on that. And then plus, you know, the Lloyd Green's work on there is beautiful. It's a great track. And you know, if you never listened to a Linda song except for like Cook of the House and Seaside Woman,
listen to
Love's Full Glory. Go onto YouTube, and maybe even you listen to Oriental Nightfish. Check out Love's Full Glory if you haven't, and I think you will be pleasantly surprised on how great that track is vocally and musicianship wise. So please check that out. Ken, thank you for joining us again for part 2. There's going to be plenty of room for part 3 or part 4. Let's see. I got to do the research and see how big the tracks he gave away and helped on in the 70s are. But Andy, what do you got?
Just to kind of bring it back to attention, and I'm going to email this to you, right, Ken and Tom, so you both have it. The track is 3 minutes and 19 seconds on the album, okay?
Right.
The other version I'm talking about is 4 minutes and 29 seconds, so it's considerably longer. I'm going to send it to you. I'm going to email it to you both now so you have it. And check and see if you've heard it before.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
I'm wondering, does this have anything to do with The Cooler? Maybe there were longer versions in The Cooler, the film?
Maybe you might have a point there. Right.
Maybe I got to go watch that again. It's been a while.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering. Yeah, it's
coming to your inbox shortly.
Okay.
Thank you, Ken. Let's talk about the things you've got upcoming. I know we're not posting this for a couple weeks, but you know, things that you have going in the future. Let's talk about your YouTube channel, your Every Little Thing show. You know, so plug away. Now's the time.
Well, the YouTube channel, as I said earlier in the show, I just did an interview with Ed Ryan, who was my co-host in the very first year that I did a Beatles show on WNYT on Long Island. And, you know, we were a great team together. And every now and then we hook up, and he was on my live broadcast on WDHA in New Jersey. He was also on my Every Little Thing syndicated show. But now you can actually see him in the flesh. And he's a great musician. And he's been making a living as a musician, just doing gigs for the last 40 years, which is not easy to do. He writes his own material. He's been in classic rock bands. He does Irish music. He does everything. You know, he's even done stand-up comedy. And so that's my latest video on Ken Michaels Radio. I also did an interview with Dan Costin, who has been a frequent guest on Plastic EP's YouTube channel. He's an archivist, a photographer, author of books, and he has been working on new projects for 60s bands, The Circle, and Don Daneman is actually one of the guests at the fest from The Circle, and The Left Bank, and he talks about the projects that he's got for those two bands, plus he does a Fab Five show on my YouTube channel where you pick your go-to albums from each of the solo Beatles and the group. And I also recently had Kid O'Toole on the channel picking her, what she considers the most underrated of the solo Beatle albums, one from each and an underrated Beatles album. Things we said today, we had two people who are involved with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's new exhibit on Get Back and Let It Be. It's what is Get Back to Let It Be. We'll be doing a panel at the fest, just like a Talk More Talk. We'll be doing a panel with Lawrence Juber, which should be coming up on our YouTube channel, I'm sure. And then there's Every Little Thing, where I've got a new show that I'm working on. It's got a thematic set of songs whose titles start with the letter J. It's just stuff like that that I've been doing for the last 40 years. Maybe I'll be doing something for Earth Day, songs that fit that category. And that's basically it. I still have my website, kenmichaelsradio.com. If you like Beatles trivia, the kind of trivia I've been doing now for 40 years on Every Little Thing, and you can just go to the website, go to the Beatles trivia and games page. There's prizes that I give away, a choice of 10 every single week. And some of the questions and games are challenging. Some of them I make intentionally easy.
All right.
Did you ever figure out? No, you didn't.
No. Yes, I know. So a couple weeks ago, you had this great, great trivia question. And it was like three or four songs. And you were like, Nate, what? Yeah. What was that? Three or four?
It's four. It's four songs.
Four songs in common. And they all have something in common. And I was just like looking over these tracks, and I'm looking at musicians, and I'm thinking producers, I'm thinking mixers, you know, and I'm thinking all of this stuff. And then here it is. They are all track seven on the album.
That was the common thing that kept them all together. They were track sevens.
Yeah, they were track seven. I'm like, that's sneaky, Ken Michaels.
You know what made me think of that? There was an interview that Danny Harrison gave.
Yes, I know where you're going. Yeah,
he said that his father liked to place the song that was track seven on his albums as his favorite or one of his favorites.
This was the stuck inside a cloud story, right? Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that made me think, why don't I just pick four albums and take the seventh track, you know, and list them and see who can figure it out. Five people got it. So
yeah,
you know, yeah. I like doing those things.
Yeah. And you're up to now, I think, what, 50 stations all over the country for your syndicated Every Little Thing radio show?
Yeah, it's around, I think it's 55 now. And there's one page on my website. If you go to the drop down menu where you see listen, there's a page for Every Little Thing, and it lists all the radio stations. It lists the broadcast times and links to their websites so you can stream them, because it's not a show that you can get on demand. You have to listen to them as live broadcasts on the station. But my show is heard every day somewhere.
Yes.
And the great thing about streaming is that it's worldwide. You know?
Absolutely.
You can imagine how excited I was when I was on XM Radio for the first time, because I said, I'm going across the country. Well, now anybody who has a YouTube channel,
the internet,
you know, you could be heard anywhere around the world. So, but it was pretty exciting back then.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. Andy, anything to add before we sign off here?
Not much. We definitely have enough for a part three, I think, right?
Yes, Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to check and see. I'm going to do the research for the 70s because I know there's a bunch of stuff we can include for the 60s as well. So let me see how big the list will be for the 70s. You know,
in 2023, we'll do part three.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we did part one in 2020 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully we can get that a little quicker this time around. But I'm sure there's going to be at least a good 20 tracks in the 70s because I know he did some backing vocals and we know songs like Giddy and 4th of July and Let's Love and Mine for Me, you know, so the list is endless, you know, stuff for Ringo as well. So we'll get that list out and we'll try to get part three posted as soon as possible. So, but anyways, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Two Legs Podcast. There you go. Andy's showing up our brand new business card. You can find us on YouTube. Hopefully by the time this is posted, we will have hit that 1,000 subscriber goal. And we're getting there. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and watching us chat about our favorite musician. And every once in a while, we go off the cuff, and we just did a 75th birthday weekend with Elton John. We ranked our favorite Elton John records and our favorite songs. And then the next day, we posted the show we did with Chip Mattinger and Mark Easter about Elton John and the solo Beatles, where we just name all the connections that Elton John had with yes, exactly. So, and that was a lot of fun to have them back on. We learned a few things too. We absolutely did. And that was great. Like, I mean, you talked about that, the concert, that Montserrat concert that I had no clue of. I didn't know about that with, Elton John Sting and Paul singing Hey Jude. Yeah. Hey Jude about that. Yeah. So that was really cool.
Did you mention Regimental Sergeant Zippo?
We shouldn't have. They did. But we,
Chip and Mark did.
Mark did. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
They did.
But yeah. Love that album. That was one of my favorite Record Store Day releases since I've been doing Record Store Day. Love that record. You should check it out. What else, Andy? We've got emails at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Ken, what was the name of your website again so everybody knows they can get a hold of you there?
KenMichaelsRadio.com. And if you can, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Ken Michaels Radio, and the Things We Said Today podcast. And of course, Talk More Talk.
Talk More Talk, which I was just going to talk about. Right. Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast with myself, Ken Michaels, Kid O'Toole, Joe Mayo. Every once in a while, our old friend Ken Womack will pop in and talk about what he's working on. As we know, he's working on this great, the Mel Evans, the wonderful, the gentle giant, and this book coming out next year, I think, 2023, when the two books will come out. And we're all excited.
I think there's one a year.
One a year? Okay, so 2023 and then 2024. Okay, thank you for that. Yes. Yeah. So we're all looking forward to that. And I think that's about it. So everybody out there, for Andy, for Ken Michaels, myself, Tom Hunyadi, as always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan Seeley.
Include that. I think you should include that.
Okay, we will.
That should be an Easter egg or something, maybe.
Thanks. Yeah, tack it on at the end of the episode.
Sure.
All right. Ready? Okay. One and a two. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to 100.
Oh, my God.
I know. Buttermouth today.